I had the unfortunate task of doing laundry at my great grandma's T's house. Even though it was for this one day until our washer arrived, me and T always had a rocky history, and I hardly came to visit her for this reason. But that's for another story. Her laundry room was massive enough to be a master's bedroom, not much filled the space except for a washer and dryer that sat across the room from one another, and a folding table that sat in front of the windows. Relieved that my clothes had finished drying, I transferred them onto the folding table. I opened the blinds to look out back to see who was outside. A few houses sat open behind hers, and there was always something there happening. In one of the houses' open doorway was an outline of a man with a top hat. He was blacked out in smoke. Startled, I blinked my eyes and shook my head to make sure my eyes weren't deceiving me. He was still there, watching the children as they play in the yard. The large black figure began floating its way to the children. I started to panic and began beating on a window, yelling for them to run, but they didn't hear me, and one by one, they all dropped. All four of the girls lay lifeless. I ran out the laundry room, grabbing the caller's phone from off the wall in the kitchen by the back door, ready to dial 911. As soon as I made it outside, they were gone. The little girls were gone. And there were people sitting in that very yard where they were, staring at me. Tears filled my eyes. I was stumbling over my words, asking them about the girls. I was so embarrassed and maybe that I had gone crazy when they asked me, "What girls?" I ran back into the kitchen, replaying what I knew I saw over and over in my head. I realized the house wasn't the same. That house was blue, but through the window, it was white and surrounded by flower beds, and the ground was fully covered in grass and clean, not dirty and trashy like I'd seen out there. My great-grandma arrived home through the front door in her living room. She sat at the kitchen table where I was seated and said, "Time lapse." "What? You seen the girls, didn't you?" "How you know, T? What happened there?" I had so many questions I needed answers to. So, she began like this. March 7th, 1920 was our town's first murder. Margaret, Joanne, Barbara, and Tina Boudreaux were my friends. They were quadruplets. We were supposed to play that day after church, but my mom insisted that I lie down for a nap since I was so sleepy in church. I went in the laundry room to watch my friends play in the yard. Their dad, Bob, had recently lost his job at the bank and was drinking heavily. I found it strange he was in his tuxedo and a top hat with a gun. He stumbled his way off the steps towards them. They paused from chasing each other around. He was yelling at them, saying how sorry he was and how he hated how hard life was of going to be for them, and it wasn't his plan for them to struggle. He lifted the gun, and within seconds, he shot them dead, his own daughters. He looked so remorseful afterwards. Then he looked up and spotted me watching through the window. With tears in both of our eyes, he lifted the gun once again and shot himself through the head. There were only eight. Their mom was found strangled in bed. He strangled her with his bare hands. She began to cry. I would see my great-grandma cry. I was only used to seeing her angry. "But isn't today March 17th?" "Yes. Yes, it is. I've seen this occur only twice. I no longer look out that window. It still pains me, and neither should you. It makes you different. It makes you colder." A month later, my great-grandma died of natural causes. And just maybe what happened so many years ago made her who she was throughout the rest of her life. I kept my word and never peered out that window on March 7th and found time lapse is something that some people experience for a few moments. It's just sad that the death of the Boudreaux sisters is more haunting to them than to me.